Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for your introduction. First of all, how many of the people are from Quantum Chaos, and how many are from how many from Quantum Chaos? One, two, three, four, five. Oh, okay, six. Oh, yeah, but you're half quantum computer.
Well, but that's us as well. That's a long question to ask.
I've been asked if it's a subject journal talk on the subject, and in the last 15 minutes or so, I will give some new results. So if people are familiar with quantum cryptography, please be patient. I mean, I try to make it general. So the title of my talk would be From Quantum Cheating to Quantum Security. My name is Haifang Lo. I'm from Magic Technology, which is based in New York. Our URL is here, and this is our logo. Because so many popular people ask me about my company, so I may as well just say a few words and finish with it. We focus on commercial applications of quantum information processing. We are for profit, we are privately funded. We have an office in New York, a laboratory in Somerville near Boston. We have 8 or 9 people, and we are hiring engineers and scientists. So what do? We do in-house research. Say, in Somerville, we have a experimental team working on quantum cryptographic experiments. We try to construct some device to sell. And we are interested in buying up intellectual properties right from the community. So we buy patents from the community. And we look into projects which have applications, and we are interested in funding projects which have applications in the university. So, but we are not trying to be NSF, right? So we're not trying to do sanction. But if you have something which are potentially commercially interesting, let us know. We have openings in optical, atomic, and molecular physics. We also have one in solid state physics in New York. So if any of you know of people who are interested, let me know. Okay, so back to science, from quantum cheating to quantum security. So here's a list of the most frequently asked questions. First of all, what is quantum cryptography? What can we do with it? What can't we do with it? And finally, what lies in the future? Near the end of the seminar, I will give you my answers to those questions. So some of you may have seen the transparencies before, so I apologize. Well, cryptography is sort of a foundation of security for military and diplomatic communications. However, more recently, it also has applications in electronic business and electronic commerce. If you look at the foundation of cryptography, it's of course mostly computational assumptions, such as cracking is a hard problem. And I presume most of you in the audience already know about source cracking algorithm, which sort of destroy the foundation of computation assumptions. So just a quick review on the subject. So what's wrong with conventional cryptography? Well, the first thing is source algorithm, which can efficiently break many public key cryptographic systems, such as the RSA system, which is the best known public key system. And it also breaks discrete lock system, which is also quite widely known. And you look at Curve, it's sort of a next generation cryptographic system in public key that people are working on. So if they work on the system, that would potentially be even more vulnerable to source attack. The second algorithm is Grover's algorithm, which is useful for symmetric key encryption. So we can crack things like DES data encryption standard or AES advanced encryption standard. It's a square root speed up. It's not exponential, but it's very useful. So we go from square root n to, from n to square root n. So the bottom line is that if you have a quantum computer, conventional cryptography would be in big trouble. And second problem with conventional cryptography is that, of course, it's very hard to predict the future, right? Who knows what will happen in future? And there might be some unanticipated advances in hardware and algorithm. And in fact, in the history of cryptography, there have been many surprises. and I think it's fair to say that we should take no chances. So that's one part of the talk, but the main subject of the talk is not really about quantum computing, but about replacing the foundation of cryptography. So as I said, the current foundation is computation assumptions. We assume some problems are difficult to solve. And naturally, a new foundation would be quantum mechanics, and a subject would be quantum cryptography. So that would be a main subject of my talk, really. So if you are late, don't worry. I mean, that's the beginning of my talk. Just in time for the main subject. Well, because some of you may not be familiar with quantum information, so let me just go to the basic. So what's the idea of quantum cryptography? The idea is that suppose I ask you a single question. I give you one photon in four possible polarizations, either vertical, horizontal, or 45 degrees, or 125 degrees. Can you tell me which one I'm giving to you? That's the question. And the answer is surprisingly no, it's impossible to know which one. So that's something that's totally quantum and different from quantum classical mechanics. So why is it the case? There's a well-known quantum no-coupling theorem, which says, suppose I give you an unknown state, for example, a vertical polarized photon, and I don't tell you which polarization it is, so you can be anywhere. And suppose you try to make a copy. Right, so you put a piece of paper, one the Xerox machine, make two copies. It's fundamentally impossible because it's not unitary. So it's not allowed by quantum mechanics. And more generally, if you try to learn something, you try to distinguish between two states which are not orthogonal. So for example, a vertical polarized state and a 45 degree polarized state. Information gain implies discrepancy. So you learn something, you discover something. And you can write out in mathematics, and that's all true. So we can use, suppose we have a single photon, right? We can use it to encode information. For example, we can call a vertical polarized photon as 0, a horizontal polarized photon as 1. So that would be one possibility. But of course, we can choose another basis, right? We can choose the 45 degrees polarized photon to encode as 0, and you call the other guy a 1. That's okay. Right. But suppose I'm not telling you which one I'm choosing. I may be choosing one basis or the other. Okay. Then the problem becomes that it's not possible to know both properties. So these are sort of complementary observables. So you can learn one property here. You can make a measurement in one basis, or you can make a measurement in the other basis. But it's not possible to make both measurements at the same time. And in fact, if you make a measurement in one basis, you will automatically discover signal in a second basis. And using that idea, there's one application. Before I go into the application, let me just say that, so this is classical money, and it looks very interesting, very nice, but it has a problem, which is, it's very easy to counterfeit. So what's going on? Suppose I have a piece of paper money, right? We put in one piece of paper, make a copy. It's classical, right? So you have some information, whatever it is, 0 or 1, some serial number, a picture of Washington, whatever. So we can just make a copy. So in theory, there's nothing to stop the counterfeiter to do something like that. And Wiesner proposed that I have quantum money. So I guess following. There's a serial number, 101101, for example. And in a bank record, there is also a serial number. In addition, there is a sequence of single photons. So each one is one photon. And each one has a specific polarization. For example, the first one is vertical. Right. Second one, right-handed. Third one, left-handed. Fourth one. Horizontal, different horizontal. So in the bank record, it has a serial number, and we can look up the polarizations and read up what it is. So basically, if someone presents some sort of quantum money to a bank, the bank can just check the polarization and verify the polarization is correct. But the idea is that the basis, so is rectilinear or diagonal, has to be kept secret. And by doing that, it's not possible to copy quantum money because we have four possible polarizations, right? We just don't know which one we have. Of course, a bank has an advantage because a bank knows which basis it is using, so the bank can verify. But without that information, it's not possible to make one more copy. So that's the idea.
So what do you mean basis is unknown?
Basis, I mean, there are two possible basis. One is the rectilinear basis. So it could be in the rectilinear basis, or it could be in the diagonal basis. But
For each individual photon,
it can be in one of the two
basis. The basis of each individual photon? Okay.
Yes, it's a random basis, and it's chosen by the bank, and it's kept secret. Yeah. Question? Right, friends. And in fact, we can modify the idea for the second application, which is quantum key distribution. The usual scenario is that we have two persons, Alice and Bob, and they share a communication channel. The problem is that there's an evil eavesdropper, Eve, who's listening or wiretapping the channel. So how to prevent Eve from knowing the message? Of course, we perform encryption, right? We have a message, Manhattan Beach, sorry, not Manhattan Beach, and then we encrypt it by some encryption key. So that would be something that Eve will receive. So it's announced in public, basically. So Eve knows that message, but it carries basically nothing about the original message. Right, and Bob, using the same key, can decrypt the message. And it was proven by Cernan back in the 40s that the security of the message depends on the length of the key. So if they have a long key, then it would be secure. And in fact, a key has to be as long as the message for it to be perfectly secure. So that would be a simple description. And the question becomes how we transfer the key. It's a real question because classically there's no way to do it because in theory, suppose we try to send a key, the eavesdropper can just make one copy, right? She put in a piece of paper, make one copy, keeps one herself, sends one to Bob. So from now on, both Eve and Bob have the same key. Therefore, all classical schemes are in theory insecure. In contrast, in quantum mechanics, we have a quantum no-cloning theorem, which says that it's not possible to copy an unknown quantum state. So it's fundamentally impossible for the eavesdropper to extract the information, the quantum information. So what quantum cryptography can do would be quantum key distribution to allow Alice and Bob to transfer the key, making it impossible for the eavesdropper to wiretap. Let me just clarify what I mean by quantum key distribution. The idea is not for Alice to prepare one key and present it to Bob. The idea is more like the following. Alice and Bob randomly just generate some keys of their own. So Alice generates something here, Bob generates something here. And then they discuss and compare the results in some way, and they figure out where they have the common random numbers. And these common numbers would be used as a key. It's a random process, but it works. And for quantum key, we need two channels. One is a classical channel, one is quantum. The classical channel is supposed to be public, so anyone can listen to the channel. And it's supposed to be unjammable, which I mean no one can change a message. So it's like a New York Times, so everyone gets the same copy, so there's no ambiguity, or a BBC radio. it's quantum cryptography, so we have a quantum channel. The signals that will be sent would be, as I said, one of the four possibilities. And the basis would be either rectangular basis or diagonal basis. And the channel can be one of the three possibilities, optical fiber, open air, or quantum satellite. I will communicate that later. There are various proposals for doing quantum distribution, but let me just focus on one of them, which is the best known proposal, BP84, Bender and Barsha, 1984, which involves exactly the four polarizations that I introduced before. The other ones based on EPR pairs and two orthogonal scales, but non-orthogonal scales, but I will go into that. Do you think I should discuss a procedure for BP84, or is that something that is well understood? So how many people know procedure for BP84 well? And how many people do not know procedure well? It's sort of a mix, so maybe I should go into procedure, so when I finish, I will let people know to switch back. So the procedure is that Alice would send the four polarizations, one of four polarizations to Bob, randomly, so it's any one of them. And Bob will pick a basis to perform measurement. The basis could be rectilinear or diagonal. It's a random measurement. And then he will write down the result of the measurement. Say, for example, here, he measure along the diagonal basis and get 135 degrees. Okay. The key thing is the next step. Okay. The basis would be kept secret, so he's not going to announce the basis. He's already announced the basis, but not the result. So he's going to say, okay, I'm going to use the diagonal basis, right? But it's very important that he will announce the basis only after the transmit. So he can transmit the signal first, and then he measure it, measure the signal, and then he announces. So during the transmission of signals, Yves has no information about which basis Bob will be using. So Yves doesn't know, given a transmission, what measurement Bob will be performing. I think that's very important. Okay. And finally, Alex will announce which basis she will be using so he can compare the basis. So here, Alex is using rectilinear and Bob is using diagonal, so the answer is no. Okay. And there's a step for tests for tampering, right? So to see if the Yves shopper is listening or not. So I will go into that. Just to make sure that people understand the situation. Alice will send a sequence of single frequency Bob, so out of the four polarizations. And Bob will perform one of the two measurements, rectilinear or diagonal. And Bob will get some measurement outcomes. And then Alice and Bob will compare the basis. So I say, for example, here, Bob will say, I'm using the rectilinear basis. Okay, and I say, oh yes, I'm using the same basis. So yes, they are using the same basis. And for example, in the second case, Alice is using the diagonal one and Bob is using the other one, right? The rectilinear one. So the answer would be no. So these are the ones that they are using the same basis. Right. Of course, they have some convention, right? They have some convention to change the polarization to some number. Say, they call a vertical polarization a zero, horizontal one. So that would be one possibility. So finally, they generate some numbers. Okay, so far so good. But what about test for tampering? So how are we going to know if Yves is listening or not? So they pick some random sample. So they pick, okay, maybe Gisco, just random. And then they compare the results. And then, let's think about the problem, right? If they're using the same basis, so Alex is doing one program in, say, rectilinear basis, and Bob is measuring along the same basis, and if there's no one listening, and if there's no noise, of course they should get the same answer. So they will have a synchronization here. So by estimating the error rate, they will know how much the eavesdropper is listening to the message. And if the error rate is too big, they just forget it. They just throw away the data.
The eavesdropper listening to the message means Eve absorbs a photon and sends off one of her own?
I will discuss that in more detail, but actually I allow anything that is consistent with quantum mechanics. So eavesdropper, they have a quantum computer. She can measure the photon and then send it back, or she can put an antenna to the system and then couple the system and then evolve the system and keeps part of the system herself and send something to the other box, and that would be that will come later. Yeah. So you can do anything, basically.
But ultimately, she wants to send a photon, doesn't she?
Yes, ultimately she would like to send a photon to Bob.
In debate for,
I'm not going to be here.
If the photon doesn't get to Bob, Bob doesn't know whether the photon which is absorbed by the fiber.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Was there to absorb?
Yeah, we have to consider the question of detection deficiency and loss in the channel and things like that. But for now, I mean, I'm just considering BBA for which assumes Alex and Bob always gets some photons from Alex. I will go into that. Yeah. But if error rate is not too small, if error rate is small enough, then they perform error correction. Make sure they have the same key, first of all. Second thing, they need to make sure that Eve knows almost nothing about key, so they need to perform some sort of piracy amplification to amplify the piracy. I won't go into all the details here. But let me say that for experiments, people have done real experiments over commercial fibers, telecom fibers, something like 450 kilometers in Los Alamos, and also by Paul Thompson in British Telecom. Now he's in Corning.
About these implementation, were they single photon?
Let's see. I think most of them use, they use coherent states, and I believe here they also use coherent states, although there are some proposals. Actually, they have done some recent experiments using EPR, well, not EPR based, but using parametric GaN conversion photons. And the second one is open air experiments from ground to ground over 1.6 kilometers. So it's in daylight. And there's one proposal for ground to circular experiment. It looks something like that. So. Actually, I think it's better to transmit from the satellite to the ground, but the picture goes from here to the satellite. So they said almost single photons, which would sort of disperse over an area of 12 meters. Here it says 300 kilometers. It looks like a long distance, but it's not really a big problem because most of the upper atmosphere is almost vacuum, so there's not much dispersion here. So the main dispersion is just in the last few kilometers. So in fact, people believe that... That's why it's better to go from the satellite to the ground, because most of the scattering dispersion would be airborne. Yeah. Yes. And people believe that something like open air, maybe, I don't know, 1.6 or maybe 10 kilometers would be we have the same dispersion for the ground to circular experiment. So that's why people believe it's not hopeless. It might be possible to theoretically. Okay, just a quick review experiment. What about theory? Security of quantum key vision. These two well-known people, Bassar and Crapo, they say the most important question in quantum cryptography is to determine how secure it really is. And I think it's quite obvious why they say that, because if it's not secure, then why bother, right? We can use many conventional systems or new proposals, so it's not useful. And second reason is that the first scheme for quantum key solution was proposed in 1984, so it took more than 10 years for people to come to some proof of security. So it was a long-standing problem from this point of view. The first thing is that quantum cryptography is really a highly slippery subject. There have been many, many problems in the subject, and for more than 10 years, people believe some schemes, which people call quantum bit chameleon, could be possible. But it turns out that it's not possible. So it took a long time for people to realize that as well. So for these reasons,
it doesn't stop people from writing papers proving that it is possible.
Well, it doesn't stop people from disbelieving the results, yeah. But that's another part of the story. Right, let me say, why is a proof of security that difficult? So that returns to, is that the question from you, what the eavesdropper can do? Basically, we allow the eavesdropper to do anything which is allowed by quantum mechanics. So suppose the eavesdropper gets some inputs from Alice and Bob, right? She had some ancilla in her quantum computer, so she put in the quantum computer. She evolved the whole system by some unitary transformation. So she chooses the unitary transformation. Finally, she sends something to Alice and Bob, and she keeps something herself. So that would be the most general description for a cheating strategy. And it's difficult because we don't know what UE is. She can choose whatever she wants. It's difficult also because there will be noise in the channel, and it's very hard to say where the noise comes from. So could be pessimistic. We have to say all the noises actually come from the eavesdropper, right? Maybe eavesdropper will just listen in Alice's side and do something, and then finally we send something in Bob's side. So maybe there's no channel. Maybe she replaced by a perfect channel or something like that. Who knows? And the second thing is that classical reasoning in general doesn't apply because it's quantum mechanics. So if you try to write down some probability for a problem, some of the probabilities are not well defined because they may be, we have to make sure that those measurements, they correspond to some real measurements, right? If they're just fictitious measurements, then they are not performed, they are not well defined probabilities. Also, just to define what do we mean by security is a hard problem, because a naive definition doesn't work. For example, if you take the eavesdropper's information to be less than something like delta n, so n is a number of bits, so as the message gets longer, the eavesdropper knows more. That would be a problem because maybe it's a long message, right? Beatrice, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, there's a secret password, like 86. 7-3, and maybe that's for a cruise missile, that's a password for a cruise missile or something. Right. So if it's a long message, maybe eavesdropper doesn't care about the original message, just look at the last part. And so by accumulating a long enough answer, she will know about the password. So that's really bad. Okay. Second definition, exponentially small, right? I, if it's exponentially small in alpha, sorry, in L. And L is chosen by Alice and Bob. Okay, looks very good. For all strategies. But it doesn't work because it's impossible to achieve. It's impossible because we can just think of one strategy. Like Eve stops everything. Eve just cut the channel. And then she replaces the channel by some space prepared by her. So that's a specific space. She just prepared it and then put it to the channel. Okay. So if she's lucky enough, so if she's really lucky, right, she might pass the test because there's some probability that maybe Alice is really sending some string like that, right? There's always some probability. It's not zero. So the bottom line is that it's unlikely to succeed, but it might succeed with some probability. And the correct definition is, of course, to consider that probability. So for any e-string strategy, we say a scheme is secure if either you will almost always fail, right? You will pass with some exponentially small probability, or Eve's information will be exponentially small, so that's okay as well, right?
So, the security parameter, mm-hmm. is that just some arbitrary constant, or is that dependent on the length of the message, or what?
It depends on the protocol. So it could be the length of the message, but it could be the amount of privacy amplification they perform. So what hash function they employ in the system. How much software program they run in post-processing. Okay. So it depends on how hard they are willing to invest in your system in some way. It could be just software based, I mean, it doesn't have to be hardware based. Okay. Well, of course, there are a number of proofs in the subject, and of course, if you ask me which one I like most, of course, I would just say I find my own proof. So, guess I work with Jeff Chow in science. So they all use different ideas, and one approach by Shaw Peskow and also earlier by myself and Chow is to use the idea of reduction to reduce a problem, a quantum problem, causal problem, and so Myers has a proof which is based on conjugate observables. So when you learn something about one observable, concept POVMs for conjugate observables, they have some specific properties. Well, I won't go through all of this, but Behan and Thorpe then all have proofs. What I would like to emphasize is that there's a convergence of ideas more recently. And Shaw Peskow has a proof which sort of reduces one proof to the other proof. The first proof would be based on quantum computer, so that's a low charge proof. So it's simple to understand conceptually. But it's, it assumes something very strong. It assumes that Eisenberg have quantum computers. Okay. So Myers' proof is interesting because it's a strong result. It doesn't require quantum computer. On the other hand, it's not easy. It's very difficult to understand, I would say, actually. So what Shaw Peskow did was to map from one proof to the other proof and provide a simple explanation for the reason why the Myers proof really works. And the explanation is based on quantum error correction. And there's a hidden mathematical structure in the Myers transduction based on, for the expert, the CSS code, Calgapan's Shaw scheme code. Well, I won't go into all that. Let me see. How long is my seminar supposed to be?
20 more minutes.
20 more minutes. Okay. Wait. Let me just say that so far I'm just concerned quantum contribution. So Eisenberg, a very nice guy, has an evil Eve. And now I move on to a second situation in which both Eisenberg and evil. Okay. And so what are they trying to do? So they are evil. They are trying to, well, I think the best problem would be the age problem, but that would not be politically correct. So it has to be a median errors problem. So we have two median errors, X and Y. So X is the amount of money he has, okay. Y, well, he has $5, basically. So the question is, who is richer? So is X larger than Y?
That's just a cigar.
Yeah, so which one is what? So actually, that was a classical problem by proposed by Yao in computer science. So the question is, of course, not just to compute X larger than Y, but to keep some secret. So how to find whether X is larger than Y without revealing the secrets of X and Y for each other. There are two classical solutions. One is, suppose they trust Charlie, right? They can just tell Charlie the answer, and Charlie can just compute. But of course, Charlie might be dishonest. Second assumption, make computation assumptions. Effecting is a hard problem, so even though the information is there, no one can information. So that's why people think that, well, these assumptions are very strong, so can we remove those assumptions and use quantum mechanics? And for a long time, people believe that that's actually possible. But finally, it turns out that it's really impossible. And it's built a series of Noble theorems. And one, the most famous and the first Noble theorem is by Myers and also myself and Chow. So the statement is that the well-known protocol, which I will define very carefully here, called bit commitment, is actually impossible to achieve. And the assumptions are that we assume two parties, so we have only two persons, no third party. And it's based solely on quantum mechanics, so there's no special relativity or general relativity or some new physics, just quantum mechanics. and we assume there's no noisy channel or no third packets, things like that. And then we can prove that it's actually impossible to achieve that protocol. And yeah, price, because quantum mechanics are a generalization of classical physics, right? So long as the system is described by quantum mechanics, even if it's classical or some sort of hybrid skin, quantum and classical hybrid skin, it will scale up high. So the upshot is that quantum computers can break any big commitment scheme which is based on quantum mechanics only in the two-party situation. So in summary, we have good foundation of security. We know that some schemes are possible, for example, quantum computers reach perfect security because no cloning. And we also know some schemes are impossible, such as big commitment and operator transfer, which is sort of the holy grail of cryptography. And we know the reason because that's based on quantum tricking idea by the EPR paradox, Einstein Pogorzelski Rosen paradox. So it looks secure, but it's actually insecure. This is some sort of quantum tricking strategy using entanglement, which would allow the eavesdropper to cheat. So the next question may be, what's the boundary to the power of quantum cryptography, and why is there such a boundary? And people have done various work on subjects like secret sharing, gambling, concussing. Well, I won't go into all that. Well, let me just present my philosophy in the subject, okay, philosophy. So in general, we have a problem which is quantum classical hybrid, and it's very complex. That's the usual situation we are faced with. And we would like to reduce it to something simple, which is either fully quantum or classical. Well, in the classical case, we have classical probability theory, so it's simple because we can apply well-known classical theories in a subject. In the quantum case, it's just a unicurve transformation, and we know how to deal with unicurve transformation. So the question is, how do we reduce from something difficult to something simple here altogether? And my answer is that the reduction from a hybrid protocol to a quantum protocol is always possible because it's just a purification, because quantum mechanics is the basics of the hybrid protocol. So we can always describe it from described by quantum mechanics. So I will go into this a little bit more later. But let's consider a second reduction. We reduce from hybrid to classical description. So it's a classicalization argument. When we can apply classical probability theory to a problem? And it turns out to be a simple answer. We just consider computing observables. So we do some cross-training in the observables, make sure that they compute in some way, and then we can just think of them as classical probability theory. So that's good. So let me just say that, to prove the idea of security quantum computation, we employ this reduction idea to reduce the classical problem. And prove the impossibility of quantum big commitment, we use this reduction idea to rephrase the scheme in terms of quantum fully unicurve description. So the unicurve description is also people who call the church of a larger human space. So let me just say what this second reduction is, this quantum reduction is about. So the idea is that they can run this protocol by a quantum computer, so whatever system they have, they can always add some additional ancillaries, right? And think of the whole process, the whole protocol as a unified transformation. And finally, they have some output, and then they throw away some information. But it would be much simpler to describe the situation just by unified transformation, because it's a PSK, and it's much... So we don't have to worry about all the measurement outcomes and things like that. That's almost it. But of course, we having a foundation, we work with our details, like what bit errors we can really tolerate, what computational powers we need for quantum computation, what key generation we can achieve, and what's the trade-off. And I won't discuss all the details, but let me say that I have written two recent papers on the subject. One is in TYC, and it's basically, proof security of a six-state scheme, so it's based on not just the four polarizations, but also circular polarization, left-handed and right-handed. And we can prove security up to 12.7% in detail. So that's higher than BB84. And it uses only one-way communications, but you use mutual information between bit flip and phase error syndrome. So we face a problem in terms of error correction and figure out what the mutual information exists. And actually, we can also here we also use the general codes by the Vincenzo Swartz model. So it's interesting to see the application of quantum coding ideas in quantum computation. And if we allow two-way communications, okay, we have an even much higher error rate for BB84 and 6K. So we can allow for BB84 17% error rate, 6K is 23% error rate. Just to give you some idea, it's a huge improvement over existing schemes, because for BB84, the best existing result was 11% by Swartz Pascal here. And for 6K, it was 13% by Inamori or Foxwood. So it's at least a few percent higher. And of course, by doing that, you have your advantage. And let me just emphasize that in the proof, we introduce a new class object, which is two-way CSS-like antenna prediction protocol. So it's a generalization of CSS codes allowing two-way communications. And it sort of demonstrates the advantage of 6K scaled over BB84 because the numbers are clearly different. And also, we can prove that it's impossible to achieve the same, to a king gap number by using one-way communication only. So our protocol is strictly two-way communication. And I guess I should not present the proof here. So far, I'm just considering single photons, but people like Lückenhaus, Inamori, and Myers have analyzed the problem for non-perfect single photons, folks, by the laws in perfect devices. And Myers and Yang have thought about the problem of untrust apparatus. So suppose someone constructs some quantum computers, we are not going to trust them. How are we going to use the device? Okay. Let me just wrap up. So that was the original list. What is quantum cryptography? What can we do with it? What can't we do with it? What lies in the future? Here's the answer. What is quantum cryptography? To use quantum mechanics to conceal information. What can we do with it? Secure communication, allow two persons, Einstein and Bach, to communicate in absolute secrecy. What can we do with it? We cannot protect private information during public discussion. We cannot solve the million S problem. Well, at least we don't know how to solve it. What lies in the future? Well, conceptually, without the power of quantum cryptography, do more experiments like a ground truth cipher experiment. Do something like quantum error correction, so we have quantum repeaters. We can use quantum cryptography over long distance. There's a survey article in physics today. If you're interested to learn more about the earlier part of the talk. That's basically, there are some commercials, so please bear with me. The first commercial, there's a paperback, so coming out in 2001, so if you're interested, you're welcome to buy a copy, just by Popescu, Spula, and myself. We are the editor, so we just collect what people have done. and Spansky and myself also edit another book, on the implementation, paving the way to realization scalable quantum computers. So it's just come out in 2001. If you're interested, you can get in copy. The main commercial, we have a new journal in quantum information. It's by Wyndham Pest. We already have two issues, and the third issue will be coming out very soon. And here's a list of people involved. And let's see, well, for example, you know, Rory is here. And let's see, do I miss anyone here? Anyway, so here's a list of people involved in the project. And so I hope it will be something interesting to the community. So the idea is to bring together computer scientists, mathematicians, theoretical and experimental physicists. So it's not too expensive neither. And actually, I have some, well, I have my own copies here. So if you're interested, you can borrow to have a quick look. And I even have one subscription form that you could So I think I should, too many commercials, so I should stop here. Thank you.
Does the noble theorem apply to the non-perfect big commitment, the one by you?
Yes, it applies to non-perfect big commitment as well. Yeah.
So you would say that Ewan's newest protocol is ruled out by your proof or my proof?
Yes, I think it's ruled out. Yeah. Yes.
Would you expect that as you increase the size of the transmitted quantum systems, as you go from the 4th state to the 6th state, the tolerable bit error rate will increase more?
Ah, that's a good question. It depends on what you mean by increasing the size of system. Let's see, can I have some light?
Yeah, the switch right to your left.
To your left.
Oh. Right to your left.
We love English.
Right. The thing is that it's easier to reface the problem for security in terms of entanglement purification. And the idea is that if we, well, maybe I should give you the answer first and then I explain the answer. The answer is that if you consider a qubit system, okay. So BDA for now is 11% and 6-state. Well, it depends on one-way or two-way communication. 6K we see 24.7. And two-way is higher, okay. But in any case, I mean, the thing is that there's an improvement, right? So if the error rate really, the callable error really goes up in 6K. But if you just use qubits, you use more scale, 8K or 10K, whatever, it's not going to improve things. That would be, the 6K would be optimal. And the reason is, well, for some specific model, okay. The reason is that the 6K case mathematically corresponds to the depolarizing channel. So if you think about the Bell basis, well, I can never remember the conventions, but let's just think. Up, it's up, up, plus, minus, down, down, and that is up, down, plus, or minus, down, up. Okay, so these are the Bell scales, so these are entangled scales, right? And we can label this by, say, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, right? And then we consider Gansky matrix, well, for So not to think about one qubit, just think about us and Bob sharing some entanglement. That would be more convenient. And in that language, we only have to consider, we consider large elements, so we have many, many pairs. So we just consider the average Gansky matrix. So this average. Okay. And then we consider computing observables. So we only care about the diagonal measurements, diagonal entries. So the other ones really couldn't change anything. Okay. So for a 6K case, we have something like 1 over, let's call it P over 2, P over 2, P over 2, 3 P over 2, 1 minus 2 P over 2. So it's really symmetric. We can prove that because we symmetrize between three phases, so we get symmetrized density matrix. But in the BBK4, we are not sure. In the BBK4, basically, so that's 6K. For BBA4, we only know that we have P minus A, P minus A, and A, and this is 1 minus QP plus A, something like that. So that's less symmetry. So that's why we see the improvement for 6K. And once we reach this point, we know that we have the depolarizing channel, and adding more bases will not change things. Okay. But of course, I'm just considering a qubit system, so if you consider higher dimensional systems, then we have to do the analysis again, but some similar arguments should apply. So good news is that it's a good idea to think about the problem in terms of entanglement purification it's much simpler to understand what's going on.
And one way or two way, that's for the quantum channel, not for the
classical. When I say one way or two way, I'm referring to the post-processing. Of course, Einstein have to compare the equations, so there will always be two-way communication anyway. So just think about they have done that step. Like the next step would be they have to go from a shifted key to a real key. So the question is, in those post-processing, do they use one-way or two-way communication? And the advantage for two-way communications comes from the fact that we know from results by Bennett, DiVincenzo's, Smalling, and Wooters in the 96 famous paper that there are schemes in for entanglement purification which are one-way EPP, so entanglement purification protocol. So we have one-way protocols, which involve one-way communications. But there are also two-way protocols. The thing is that the two-way protocols are more powerful than the one-way protocols. And mathematically, the one-way protocols, you can think of the one-way protocols as mathematically equivalent to quantum error correction. And the two-way protocols are not useful for quantum error correction, but they are useful for quantum error correction in a communication setting, in which people can send backward messages. So it's not useful to send message backward in time, but it's useful to send message backwards in space. Right? So that's why it's a good idea.
Why is it interesting to have this difference? Because since you said that you need two-way communication anyway for pairing the bases, then why is it?
It's even good. No. Let me finish. I mean, since we need two-way communications to compare bases anyway, it seems to me it could be a good idea to use two-way communication.
Yeah, exactly. So why would I consider one-way communication at all?
It's just because they are fundamentally different. I mean, if you think about these two pictures, right? They really. It's just one-way protocol is a special case two-way protocol, right? Just to see the mathematics. So they have different constraints and just understand the picture. And of course, I mean, I personally think it makes sense to think about two-way protocols. Yes, there's no reason why we should think about one-way protocols. The question is more on how many rounds of communication in two-way is it really realistic to implement?
Is one-way and two-way referring to the quantum channel or the classical?
No, the classical channels. The classical subsequent classical classical post-processing.
Interesting.